Chapter 47. I Charge Bravely into Battle. The Gavani column that had hastily departed the siege to give my raiders pursuit were in such haste that they did not scry or scout properly. When they reached the first of our enchantments, a magical flare lit the cloud-darkened sky for 3 seconds. The first few spells did little damage. They were designed to warn us. But the column's momentum was too powerful for its individuals to heed the warning. There was a series of roars and crackles as the vanguard blundered into the worst of the spell field. Taran had sprinkled the site with deadly sigils and dangerous enchantments, the finest his insightful mind had learned. I watched the tall, bushy-haired mage in close-fitting brown leather armor stand astride a boulder at the top of the redoubt, using his battle staff to deadly effect as his static spells triggered. Rondal, Planus, and the other war magi, formal and informal, joined in along with plenty of covering fire from the archers in the redoubt. The goblins were taken by surprise, thankfully, and when the vanguard tried to stop, turn, and flee, they were held in place by the weight of their own numbers. Even as they died, or were incapacitated by magic, others leapt over them to take their place. The first few moments were the most deadly. After that, the Gavani moved more cautiously, which made them more prone to sniping, but which allowed one of their shamans, the lower order type, not the super shamans of the dead god's personal priesthood, to use his stone to pry some of the enchantments loose. Gavani magic is not adept at dispelling, but it has some effect. Just as the last major sigil was dispelled or triggered, or both, it was hard to keep track, even with mage sight, I decided it was time for my lancers to join the fray again. While the Gavani were defending an ambush on their flank from the redoubt, my unit thundered down a 100-yard stretch of open pasture, this time in 4 ranks instead of 2, and once again Sayake's magical talent came into play. A powerful shockwave knocked down dozens of angry warriors, and some collapsed just from the sound. Then it was a slow dance of slaughter as we waded back into the fight. Ironically, I found myself fighting shoulder to shoulder with Sir Gimbal, and I had to agree with Ronsil's assessment. The man knew his business with lance and sword, and had no trouble attacking superior numbers. Some of his men were just as deadly, and I felt a new grudging respect for the plucked warbird. He might be a mean, callous little shit, but Gimbal was human for all of his faults. He knew his duty as well as his deadly business. My admiration was cut short by the urgency of the situation. I had chosen to use my new battle staff for this engagement, and as soon as I felt Sire Kay's concussion subside, I began using it on the ferocious warriors around me. At a command, blue lightning shot out and laced its way across the mass of Gavani, sending dozens spasming helplessly to the ground to be trampled by their comrades. Another spell sent a dozen to sleep instantly. I quickly reversed the staff, muttered another command, and a 15-foot lance of fire was plied among our foe, demonstrating the utility of being hairless. Not that the bear Gavani were spared the savagery of burning, but they were less likely to ignite than their furry friends. Rondal was shooting small pebbles at the Gavani by the fistful, magically accelerating them to the speed of arrows or arbalests. Planus was standing just behind the edge of the redoubt, a wand in each hand and a fiendish grin on his face, as he enjoyed his first taste of battle. I don't know if he fashioned the war wands or borrowed them, but he seemed to know how to use them. Dozens more goblins died under their power. Other war magi were lobbing their own spells and enchantments, and some had taken up bows to fire into the Gavani ranks. But it became clear within 10 minutes of heated battle that, despite the element of surprise and the success of the ambush, we were still outnumbered. Once the Gavani discovered that for themselves, they could afford to soak up the hurt we were giving them, secure in the knowledge that they would eventually win by sheer numbers. We might be killing them by the score every moment, but we were still losing. All we had to do was keep them busy, though.
Dara says Baron Arathaniel is only a few 100 yards away to the northeast,
Pentandra told me, helpfully, as I was knocking the top off the head of one Gervan with the iron tip of my staff. I slid it 18 inches to the right, until it was lined up with the back of the neck of another, and then pressed the stud that activated the hidden blade. The ugly, hairless Gervan dropped like a rag doll. I thanked her and told her to pass that along to Taran, while I got Sire Kay to order another retreat. That excited the Gavanni. They had already forced us to retreat once. As I fell back with my men to the rise where we had started, leaving a trail of goblin bodies behind us, the Gavanni pursued us gleefully, ignoring the arrows from the redoubt and the surrounding forest. It almost looked to them as if they had us pinned down on that rise, too. That's when the horns of Baron Arathaniel's troopers could be heard through the scrub. The goblins ignored it at first, but the rumble of massed horse hooves couldn't be ignored for long. It grew in volume and intensity until I watched the left flank of the column come under heavy attack. If Sire Kay's charges had been powerful, the heavy cavalry charge by the Riverlords was devastating. We had but 250 horse. Arathaniel commanded 700, and they hit the left flank of the bunched-up column like an avalanche of steel. Caught between the hammer and the anvil, held in place by the tongs, the legion was bashed into tatters. Screams and shouts raged over the site like a storm cloud as man and goblin fought in the rain and the mud and the blood. In the chaos of the fighting, I saw my apprentice Tyndall standing up in his stirrups and flashing my old mage blade around like he was born to it. While Rondor fought with determination and desperation, Tyndall fought with aggression and ferocity. At his side was Sarakim, the Moini mage, gleefully using his magic arrows and other weapons to lay waste to the foe. When our troop regrouped and charged a second time, I found myself face to face with one of the hideously scarred hobgoblins Terlaman told us about. He was almost 5 feet tall, as broad as a man, and his hairless head had a vicious burn scar on the left side. In his hands was a human-made, double-headed axe looted from some battlefield, and he was doing his best to bisect me when his face exploded. When he fell at my feet, I could see one of Sarakim's blue and silver fletched arrows sprouting from the back of his skull. I looked up, and the war mage grinned at me from the other side of the battlefield. That was a mighty bow. I was too busy in the next moment to return the grin, and I had even less reason to. I was being rushed by a band of six, brandishing spears and scimitars. I was able to blast two before things got into hand-to-hand combat, and then I used the blade on my staff as a spear until they came too close. At that point, I felt crowded, and used a sweeping spell of repulsion that did little more than knock my attackers off of their feet. But that put them in the perfect position for Traveler to savagely trample them, which is precisely what he did. The Gavanni were trapped, but they weren't helpless. While we had magic on our side, so did they. That was evident when a goodly portion of Arathaniel's troop, about a fifth, was enveloped in an inky cloud of blue. They seemed to be fine as they rode through it, until they started falling dead on their mounts, their horses with them. I didn't know if it was an effect of breathing the cloud, or if the cloud was merely the physical manifestation of the spell, but the result was the same. With one spell, over 100 brave Riverlands knights left widows and orphans behind. That was an egregious blow to our forces, but it seemed to enrage the rest of the men and inspire them to action. While another shaman began to cast something similar or as deadly, to my amazement, I saw Rondal leap haphazardly over the top of the primitive redoubt, his mage blade in hand, leading the heavy infantry within into the fray. With their vanguard and one flank engaged, the Gavanni were disheartened when the anvil became as active as the hammer. Bunched as they were between us, the remnants of the legion began withdrawing, the rear guard first, as they saw the slaughter ahead. When their reinforcements quit arriving, the rest of the Gavanni began to retreat, in good order at first. That's when Sir Arathaniel's band managed a second charge over less than 100 feet. One would think that wouldn't be enough momentum to be effective, but it did the trick admirably. That second charge also overran one of the accompanying shamans, because I could feel about half of their defensive spells fail. So did the other magi. Within moments we were all hammering at the remnants with lavish disregard for how much energy we were expending. Great gaping holes began appearing in their retreating ranks. Of the 2,000 Gavanni who had sorted out an hour ago, more than two-thirds lay dead or dying in that cramped little field. That was a good beginning, I sighed heavily, as I watched Sauronsil lead a chasing force of 20 riders to ensure the goblins did not regroup and double back. "But at what cost?" Sire Kay asked grimly. He pointed at the eastern edge of the field, where hundreds of the Riverlands' finest knights lay dead with their horses. And what did we win?
Their attention, I said quietly.
It seems dearly bought,
Sire Kay said grimly.
Now that we have it, we should prepare to use it.
There were still 10,000 goblins surrounding the castle, but they were less organized and more dispersed as they attempted to discern through scouting and patrols just how many Humani had attacked their fellows. The retreating remnants of their sortie were no doubt vague with their own accounts of our numbers. Most Gavani can count up to 10. After that, they say many, and with the powerful obfuscation spells we had as proof against their scrying us out, I'd hoped that that confusion would work to our advantage. Seeing 100 Gervan units ordered away from the siege to march out, seeking us in several directions, began the process of dilution that was the goal of our campaign. Our bird-supplied perspective told us as much. Dara was becoming more adept at using her hawk for spying, and thus far none of the Gervani had given it any thought. I filed that away for future reference. I had gathered most of my small army together around the redoubt, stopping to eat and drink a little. Each man had been issued 5 days of hardtack, ground corn, and dried or salted meat, as transporting an appropriate baggage train was too difficult for our Alka-Alon allies. After that, we would have to live off the land, and arrange to have the wounded sent back to our field hospital. The rain had slowed to a drizzle by then, but showed no sign of stopping. When I felt we'd caught our breath, we began advancing back toward the castle, all three troops united now. It took over an hour to march back to within sight of the siege, and along the way we dispatched plenty of wounded or deserting or simply lost Gervani who lingered behind. When we finally got back around the curve in the road, there were more of those dog-cart chariots to harass us. Once again they raced toward us, flinging their javelins and firing their darts. Only this time we had a proper answer to them. Before they were even within a Wilderland's bowshot of us, Sarakim's and Lady Ithalia's strong Alka bows sent shaft after shaft unerringly at the goblin cavalry. Sarakim focused on the drivers of the carts, reluctant to hit a dog for some reason. Ithalia had no trouble slaughtering the canines and made a point of it. It was interesting to watch her humanish body shoot. It was just as elegant as a standard-issue Alka-Alon, but in a primal human fashion that made it even more beautiful to watch. There was an intense curl to her lip as she found her targets and loosed her shafts with methodical precision. Before the first of the chariots could hope to reach us, they had broken formation and retreated. "That should teach them to send cavalry against us," Sarakim said with satisfaction as he caressed his new bow with the tenderness lavished on a virgin bride. "That won't stop them," I warned. "They may be bad at it, but even they can see the advantages of cavalry. Let's see if the rest of them take the bait." Our lines formed up in the mud, with Arathaniel commanding the center, Taran the right flank, and me the left. Most of our infantry was massed in the center, with heavy cavalry screening them, and Sire Kay commanding the light infantry that was screening us all. It didn't take us long to form up, and once we formed up, as far from the castle wall as we could and still be a threat, we waited. We were clearly a small force. We were clearly large enough to punish a legion. We were clearly ready for battle. And we were clearly winded from the earlier fight. The longer we stood there in formation, just waiting, the more anxious the goblin commanders would become. Sure enough, the besieging army reformed itself to face us, with reserves that had been ranging around the castle wall being ordered to mass against us. For almost 2 hours, while we stood there and rested and snacked, the Gervani army before us contorted, and the front toward us thickened. They expected us to try to fight our way through to the gate to relieve the siege. That's what I would have expected. Just to tease them, I ordered my troops to march forward 100 paces, then stop again. Since most of them had pawed the ground bare and were tired of standing in mud that clung to their boots like glue, they were happy for the fresh footing. The sudden movement caused the goblin army to spasm as more troops were rushed to the front in expectation of our continued advance. But we just waited. "I don't follow your strategy here, spellmonger," Baron Arathaniel told me at one of our little horseback conversations. "Surely the closer to darkness, the closer to the Scrug's natural light." "The sun will not be a factor in this battle," I agreed, "but neither will the darkness.
See how they're spending their reserves to protect the gate? The lines grow thin and bare around the other sections of the castle, and yet far thicker nearer to us. I'm still not understanding. The longer we stand here, the more rest we get. I reasoned, the longer we distract them from harassing the castle, the less casualties that our men inside will take, and the more time they will have to prepare. Prepare for what? He asked, mystified. In just a few moments, I prophesied, one of those goblin commanders is going to lose their nerve. The sight of so many horses, even this far away, is going to make them nervous. Gavanni don't have the same discipline as human troops, usually. One or two brave hotheads can sway an entire group, if they aren't well led. So we show ourselves as a large, but decidedly smaller force than they are, and hope that coaxes one of their commanders to take leave of their senses and attack. I waited with Arathaniel for a while as my words came true. The reserves on our left, light infantry culled from mountain tribes, hairy, naked, iron clubs and captured swords, began chanting, and within a few moments the Gavanni warriors shrieked and charged us, on foot, over a quarter of a mile from us. It was a brave but blatantly suicidal move. A little less than 1,000 of them began racing across the trampled fields. Before the group had made it halfway, they had slowed to a walk. Duin, damn them, I swore. That's not enough of them. What do you mean? Arathaniel asked. It seems a prodigious amount to me. Not enough, I repeated. It was starting to look like I was going to have to do something brave and suicidal if the Gavanni didn't cooperate. But then another light infantry legion on the right followed their fellow's lead, and then a troop from the center. Before long, most of the Gavanni army was staggering across the field toward us. That's it, I declared cheerfully. It looks like most of them are advancing on us. That's good, asked Arathaniel, who had a commander's appreciation of numbers. Spellmonger, there seemed to be 6,000 or 7,000 goblins heading for us. 3,000 of us. I shrugged. That means that we each have to kill just over 2 goblins to turn it into a rout, I pointed out cheerfully. I've got my quota, Sarakim volunteered smugly. Maybe I should just watch and smoke my pipe. I still failed to see. Trust me, Baron, I soothed. All will become clear in a moment. Well, a few moments. The Gavanni advance slowed to a crawl as they came within bowshot. Their dogcart still dared to tease our flanks, but Kay kept them off of our infantry. Then we settled into a line a few hundred yards from each other. Prepare your men for a charge, I quietly told Arathaniel. Lances at the ready, but not couched, not yet. I'll wave once to signal to couch, twice to charge. One charge, then disengage and return to ranks. No vainglory today, I instructed. The Baron nodded, finally receiving an order he understood. He slapped his visor down over his face and rode off. What are we waiting for, Master Minolan? Sarakim asked. We're waiting for the goblins to be committed to their course of action, I answered. And there's the signal, I said with a sigh. Telemann had arranged for one of his apprentices to flash a red flare from the castle tower when they were ready within. What signal? Sarakim asked with interest. The signal that they're ready, I said. I waved my hand in the air, and Arathaniel nodded. He shouted an order, and 500 lances were leveled at the goblin vanguard. I watched their ranks with mage sight, and every dark face I spied looked grim. They had been on the business end of a cavalry charge often enough by now to know what was coming. That didn't help them much when it did. I waved again, and the horns called for a charge. Arathaniel thundered across the field at the head of that tempest of steel and flesh, and when he hit the Gavanni line first, his horse ploughed 3 ranks deep before it stopped, standing on a pile of wriggling black bodies. The rest of the line was likewise successful, and the Gavanni center started to fall apart. Additional reserves were called up as my knights hurriedly disengaged and headed back to our lines, where our archers were screening them from pursuit. But that gave me the opening I needed. With those extra reserves in motion at the Gavanni rear, that gave us the perfect opportunity to launch the second phase of the attack. Suddenly the castle gate was slammed open, and cavalry began pouring out of it, 4 riders abreast, like a bag of beans with a hole in it. Those first riders were skirmishers in charge of scattering the goblins left investing the gate. They were overwhelmed by the sudden and unexpected assault, and the gate was clear in short order. The siege had become of secondary importance now that we were here. Soon 100 men had passed through the gate and held the space beyond, then 200, then 500. When it reached 1,000, 10 minutes into the battle, someone ordered a charge. Perhaps the commanders in the rear were paying attention to the second front of attack, but they weren't able to redeploy their troops very quickly. Apart from a single line of infantry that had scrambled into place, Telemann's cavalry ploughed into the rear of their besiegers with a calamitous vengeance. They'd been cooped up in the castle for almost a week, unable to strike back, and they were clearly enjoying the bloody exercise. Still, there were plenty of goblins between us and the castle. Too many. We needed to thin out that thick, ugly center. Thankfully, I had a lot of resources to throw at them. First, I contacted my magical core. Randall, have everyone who isn't doing anything more useful start raining some nasty magical hell on all of those fellows in the center, but try to keep it toward the center. I don't want you to hit any of us. I'll have them keep it clean, Master. Are you faring well? My ass hurts and my gambeson is soaked. I have to pee. I wouldn't mind a mug of ale. Is this really the time, Rondell? Sorry, Master. Almost immediately, the air over the center of the Goblin Legion shimmered as spells began to assault them from afar. There was a lot of flashing and sparking. A spell met counterspell and the Gavanni magical defenses, but enough got through to inflict casualties. And now that my arcane forces were deployed, it was time to order my mundane troops. Pulse charge! I called across the field to Baron Arathaniel. He frowned at first, but then nodded and started giving his subordinates orders. A pulse charge is probably one of the more complicated maneuvers a heavy cavalry unit can undertake. Usually the goal of a charge is to use the unstoppable momentum of the horse and rider and focus it into a lance point, and then riding as hard and as fast as you can into the enemy. A pulse charge is different. The goal is not to shock the enemy with the force of your momentum, like an avalanche, but to erode their ability to defend themselves, like a sandcastle falling to a rising tide. Each rank of cavalry spaced out from the next, until there were three solid ranks of shields and lances facing the Gavanni center. They started off together, but when the first rank hit the halfway point toward the Gavanni line, they broke into a run and charged. The second rank waited another 20 yards beyond the first rank's starting point, keeping enough space between them to allow their comrades to withdraw with cover. By the time the third rank began their charge, the first rank had already collided with the line, and then retreated quickly and in short order, as soon as they recovered from the clash. As their stunned foes tried to recover, they received the second short charge, dealt with the chaos of a second disengagement, just in time to receive the third. Theoretically, you can do this indefinitely. Practically speaking, the organization of the line usually falls apart by the time the second row tries their second charge, unless the cavalry in question is very well trained and very well disciplined. Thankfully, it only took 4 pulse charges before the center of the Gavanni front line collapsed into utter chaos. Just as the second wave of the pulse hit, Telemann's cavalry struck them even more forcefully from the rear. The line bulged and spasmed as the Gavanni frantically tried to defend against the mounted warriors and the prospect of spellfire from above. More infantry troops poured out of the castle, taking up positions holding the line of retreat open for the cavalry, instead of rushing to engage the enemy. They were Rivelin's peasant levies, hastily armored and armed, but weeks of fighting had hardened them. The weak and the cowardly had long fallen away, and the remnant were strong and resilient. They did not break formation. The goblins were less disciplined, and when they saw the infantry follow the cavalry from the castle, a great number of them broke ranks from their left flank and ran to attack them. That not only opened up some big holes in the left, it also brought those undisciplined tribal goblins up against sword and shield-wielding men in a shield wall, and within range of the castle's arbalests. And of course, Sire Kay couldn't ride around with his company of Riverland knights with an exposed left flank right there and not do something about it. He had the initiative to see an opportunity. He charged as soon as he saw a glaring opening. Once again, his magical talent activated as he charged, and once again, he felled ranks 100 feet away with the concussion. It was a remarkable thing to behold. All of this was very encouraging, but it didn't change the fact that there were still a lot of goblins out there arrayed against us. Killing every single one of them wouldn't do a thing for the war, if the price was our lives.
Pentandra, change the focus of your spells to their right flank, I told her mind to mind. Let's see how much damage we can do to the right flank, while the knights have their fun in the center.
What kind of damage do you want? Some of those defenses are pretty thick, she warned.
She had learned a lot of war magic on the fly in the last 2 years.
They're far better protected than the center was. We can take them down, I think, but
I'm not feeling picky, I answered, readying my battle staff. Just pile up some bodies. The attack on the right flank seemed minor, after the devastation that was happening in the center and the disintegration of their left flank. But the magical core wasn't content with just lobbing damage from afar. 2 dozen war magi, most without stones, had volunteered to lead a combat assault, and they were a determined-looking group. With a little consultation, we came up with a basic plan of attack, and just as the support magi began launching spells over our heads at the massed goblinry, we began our own charge. A charge by war magi is different than either an infantry or cavalry charge. The former resembles a meat grinder, the latter a sudden, devastating thunderstorm. When war magi charge, it's more like a steady, gradual rain that sweeps away everything before it. The key is the body magic spells we use. When you can magically boost your reaction time and reflexes, and then slow down your perspective so that a 2-minute battle seems like a 15-minute dance, then moving with speed and thoughtful deliberation to slaughter your enemies becomes a simple matter of seeing openings and exploiting them. About a third of the magi were on horseback, giving them even more leverage as they waded into the field. I led that contingent, blasting through the weak shield walls their leather bucklers made, igniting anything flammable I could find, and switching from staff to war wand to mage blade with alacrity as I slew. Around me, my fellows, high magi and unaugmented wizards alike, were doing their own dances of death. A few I took note of. A young woman with 2 short mage blades and a penchant for shadow magic, who ran through the ranks of Gavani, slitting throats before they knew she was there. A well-armored giant of a man, who fought with a massive hammer that seemed as potent magically as it was effective at physically bashing heads. A team of 3 bloodthirsty war magi, who dove into the line, then stood with their backs together, and hacked and slashed and fought ferociously, piling up bodies around them waist high, while they wore maniacal grins of pure delight. Such sights were professionally inspirational. From Pentandra's more remote location, Sarakim and Lady Athalia were laying down a powerful covering fire, sniping in particular at any shamans they spotted. They must have been successful, because the defenses of the goblin legions began to decline quickly as their shafts sped home. 2 times Sarakim's bow came to my rescue as I was too busy with one fight to notice an attacker from another quarter. I could grow fond of that man. In fact, after over a year pushing parchment and taking meetings and making decisions, it was a surprising joy to be able to submerge my mind in the simple, terrible beauty of combat. I hate war. Don't misunderstand me. But if one must practice it, then appreciating the savage beauty of violence is one way to distract yourself from the vile horror that you are creating. Watching Twilight slash, stab, flash in the sun, and shoot arcane death from my hand was intoxicating. Feeling spells detonate around me, splashing the foe with fire or pain or hopelessness or shrapnel was invigorating. For several glorious minutes, I was merely a war mage doing a job. And I was good at my job. When I took a moment to breathe and return to normal speed, when there were no more foes readily at hand, I looked around. To my satisfaction, nearly a third of the goblin army had already been obliterated by our combined attacks, and we had lost a disproportionately smaller number. The remnant of the goblins' experiment with cavalry was being chased around the field by Sire Kay's knights, and even their massive eunuch hobgoblins, armed with great steel falchions, were proving no match for armored men in close combat. That was very gratifying. Telamon's people were still leaving the castle and taking up good defensive positions, and my army was pushing them toward their line. Maybe, I hoped, we could have this battle won before darkness gave the advantage to our foe. That's when we all felt a shadow pass ever so briefly over the sun. Half of the army looked up at the distraction, but could not see it directly.
A few were able to spot it and tried pointing it out. But then there was a gout of flame suddenly spouting out of the sky, a lance of flame directed at the castle's lone outlying tower. It burst into flame, roasting its defenders alive. A prodigious explosion of stone complemented it, and the large dark shape resolved itself through the dust of the collapsed tower and the smoke of its demise. The dragon had arrived.